Okay, if we have a quorum, I'd like to bring the meeting to order, please. Good afternoon. I'll commence the property committee. Please take the roll.
Roll call, Director Sheldon.
Here.
Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Amezcua. Director Nguyen. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Wigand, Director Green,
Here.
you do have a quorum of the committee.
That's great. Let's move
Director Sheldon, you're breaking in and out.
Natalie, could you take the meeting for a minute, please?
Sure. First, I just did the sandwich. Are there any items to receive too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Any visitor participation? Seeing none. We have four items on the consent calendar. Anybody have any questions or want to pull any of those? For discussion, we have a motion.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
Take a roll call vote. Director Sheldon is going to vote. Director Tran cannot make the motion.
I will move approval.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Roll call, Director Sheldon.
Yes. Yes.
Director Meeks?
Number six.
Yes. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay. Consent calendar
I'd
passes
like
with
you
five
here.
yes votes. All right. So we move on to item number five, Corona Recreation, request to expand the radio-controlled electric car track at the Warner Basin.
Yes, thank you, Director Meeks. This item is, I'm actually going to ask Daniel Park, our property manager, to present this item to the committee.
Good afternoon, members of the board. The district has a lease with Corona Recreation for operating a fishing concession at the Warner Basin Complex in the city of Anaheim. This current lease expires on September 30th of 2026. In 2021, the district authorized Corona Recreation to construct and operate a radio-controlled electric car dirt track on the lease premises, which is located at the front entrance of La Palma Avenue. According to Mr. Douglas Elliott, president of Corona Recreation, the RC track has been a huge success and has become a very popular attraction in the local community. So Mr. Elliott informed staff that a local on-road asphalt track facility utilized for RC racing, similar to what they do, would be closing after 28 years in business. And he believes there is an opportunity to expand his current operation by offering a similar asphalt track. So this would be different from the current dirt track they currently operate. So as such, Mr. Elliott has requested that he be allowed to construct and operate this new track, which would be located on the empty vacant grass facility adjacent to the existing facility. Mr. Elliott estimates a total investment of $125,450 and estimates that the two track venues combined would bring in a total annual gross income of $250,000, of which the district would get 5%. Staff has no objection at this time to Mr. Elliott's request and recommends an amendment to the lease that expand the RC track to include the new track that Mr. Elliott's proposing. That concludes my presentation. I believe Mr. Elliott is on the line today. Should the committee have any questions? Yes.
Okay, so this is a secondary track. It's not just a replacement of the existing track.
Correct. It would be adjacent to the existing dirt track. There is a distinction that it's an asphalt track, a
Right.
radio asphalt track, right?
Would this facility be able to take up slack on the fishing concession when we have to clean out the basins and everything and kind of a one-for-one good exchange?
That's a good question.
Probably not. Probably not. Right now, the Right now, the current track is revenues are about $9,000 a month. He expects, Mr. Elliott expects this track to bring in, $9,000 a month. He expects it to bring in $250,000. The district earns about, earns 5% of his revenue. So that would be maybe, what, 12, 13,000 dollars. Well, that rent, but he would get $250,000 revenue per year. Right now, he's his revenue is quite a bit more than that per year, right?
But it could mitigate it, correct? I mean, you're only talking about 4 months of the year that it could be his fishing venue could be out of.
That could be a loss of $700,000-$800,000 of revenue for those 4 months. So this is relatively small in comparison to the loss of the fishing revenue.
But Director President Green, you're right. It would offset it a bit. It could mitigate it,
okay.
Right.
But I mean, it has to be. You know, things have to be.
It would help.
Done. Would so help. At least this would be something that could help mitigate those losses.
And Mr. Elliott's always looking for other sources of revenue, because years ago, and some of the committee members or board members will remember Director Anthony telling him he should go and look for other sources of revenue and subleases, and because at a time when fishing was down and rents were receipts were low and rents were low, and so Australians always look for other sources of income, and so yeah, this would offset some of those losses.
Does he have adequate parking for the expanded use?
I don't know the answer to that question.
It seems adequate. We've never done a traffic, how much traffic they actually get, but he's never complained. And they do it off hours, so they wouldn't be during the actual fishing concession hours, I don't believe.
We can ask that question, try to find out.
I think that if we're going to approve this, we should do that with the mindset that we're trying to mitigate any losses and help him, but that there are changes coming and that we have to clean out those basins.
He's really diversifying somewhat, right?
Right.
Yes.
But I think we should, if we can help, that would be great, but I think that we need to make sure that it's very clear that we're doing this to help him to mitigate for some losses that he might experience when we're cleaning out those basins, which we should have been doing all along.
We can definitely carry this message, yes. I do want to mention one other thing that's not in the staff report, but it's in the actual letter that's attached to the staff report. But Mr. Elliott is requesting extending the lease 5 years with another 5-year option. And at this point, staff wasn't prepared to negotiate or extend the lease. We haven't talked about it. There's some things we'd like to perhaps change. So we want to explore that. But for the time being, as far as the RC track is concerned, staff is fine with that.
That only goes through 2026?
Correct. September of 2026. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Is he willing to invest that money if it always goes for 2026?
That's why he wants to extend the lease, but he may want to do it anyway, at least try to start capturing some of the additional revenue.
Okay.
Is the maker of the motion and the second all right with making it clear that this is something we would try to do as mitigation?
I don't think we have it on this yet. Director Yeo has his hand raised. Yes, Director Yeo.
Thank you, Chair Meeks. I got a quick question. What is a removable asphalt?
Good I guess any asphalt's removable.
Okay, so that, yeah, I'm just thinking like what so when they decide no longer to operate that, they're going to restore that area back to its original ground, because it looks like it's a nice grassy area, right? Kind of like a park like environment.
Correct. We can make that. We can make removal and returning it to its original condition.
Is it like a special kind of precast or something? Okay. Thank you.
So, do we want? Is there any kind of motion to move this forward to the board? Right. So that's
That would be approved. Right, the recommended action is agendized for the May 15th board meeting, approve and authorize execution of Amendment 10 to the lease. Will include it has to be returned to its original condition and to expand the RC track to include a removable asphalt track.
Okay.
And we'll make it clear to, it doesn't have to be in the motion, I think, but we'll make it clear to him that the district's approving this under the auspices of helping him financially with the relocation of the fishing concession during the cleaning periods. I said that right. Okay. I think that's right.
It.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
All right.
Roll call. Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Excellent. Yeah, planning remediation of the former Prado shooting area. Staff report on that.
Yes, and this one, Kevin O'Toole is going to present this one, right? Let me pull up, there's a presentation here. Let me pull it up. Here it
is. Can I make, may I make a comment, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Could we move item, our informational item up and address that one and defer this one until after we address number seven. Could we move number seven up? I think both of these are going to be a good conversation.
Okay.
Chair's discretion. You certainly can if you'd like, Madam Chair.
It's your discretion. Just wondering.
I was just wondering if there's one was going to go fast, but no, we can move to item 7. All right, I'm going to see if there's any comments on 6. We have just a short staff report.
Okay, you know, then never mind. I don't want to. Okay. I thought this would be longer. We've had extended conversations on this item before. Thank you. Please disregard my suggestion. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Do you want me to change slides?
Will do. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Director Meeks, members of the committee. As you'll recall, we've been working diligently to remediate some areas in Prado Basin that have been contaminated from former shooting activities. We have been pursuing what we are calling a CAMU consolidation approach. And during the last meeting in March, we provided an update to the committee. And the committee asked us to explore what we're calling an on-site in-place alternative. So a quick review of our current CAMU consolidation approach, just for background. The consolidation approach requires us to pick material from what we call a former clear target range, which is shown here in blue. All that material across the basin on OCWD and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers property through the basin. And then ultimately dispose of that in a CAMU at Pigeon Hill. This requires us to go on Army Corps property and requires us to construct 2 river crossings, which is some of our challenges. So some of the key challenges that were identified during our last meeting that we have been working through are obtaining exclusivity agreements from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and their subleases, which includes Riverside County Parks and the Flyway Foundation. We also, because of these river crossings, we have a handful of permits that are required, including 401, a 404, a 408, and a 1600. I'll go into those in more detail. And the window of time that we're able to perform this hauling due to the flood season and the bird nesting season is in late summer, early fall, which also gives us a really brief window to navigate around the duck hunting and the dove hunting that occurs in this region. So it puts us in a very challenging spot with schedules of the actual construction. So this is a slide we shared with the board during our last meeting, and I think it helps illuminate some of the schedule challenges that we're up against. And some of the dependencies that we have on these permittings and these approvals from other outside agencies. So I've kind of walked through most of this already. So during our last meeting, the committee asked us to look at an in-place remediation alternative, which is shown here on the right, where we would be treating these two sites independently. There'd be no consolidation and no hauling occurring. And by removing the hauling component of this, it would be exclusively on OCWD property. There'd be no river crossings, and the associated permits would be remediated as a requirement. Also worth pointing out, too, is one of the other challenges that we have been working with is while hauling would be occurring, it's also the same window of time that our O&M for our part of wetlands occurs. And so that's another challenge that we've been trying to work around. This would alleviate that. I'll go into both of these sites in the next slides. So we'll start with Pigeon Hill. To remediate Pigeon Hill, there's a small area, about 1.4 acres, that has lead shot contamination. And the ultimate land use objective for this site is undeveloped open space. And so the primary receptors of concern here are actually birds. Birds will come and eat the lead shot mistakenly thinking that it is gravel or other food source. And that is the goal of remediation at this site is to alleviate that risk. And so an alternative, if selected by the board, would be to take river sediment, haul it to this location and actually isolate that lead shot by placing a sediment cap on top of it. And that is the remediation that would be proposed. And long-term O&M would include annual inspections to make sure that the cap is in place and it's not been compromised. Next slide, please. And then so at the former Clay Target Range, this is the bulk of the remediation that would need to occur. It's approximately 14 acres that need to be remediated. All of that remediation now would be occurring at this location. All the processing and the ultimate disposal of it would be occurring on property, versus the original human consolidation approach where this would be occurring at Pigeon Hill. So some of the key things that we're working through on this would be that we now have to have the soil processing site located within this pink polygon. As part of the processing, we're required to attempt to remove the actual wedge shot. Whatever we can recover would be hauled off site for recycling, and remaining material would be placed in a containment area, which has to be located above 566. And it's estimated that would be approximately 1 acre. So we're showing this here with this kind of yellow and gray box here. Not to scale, this could be strategically located in a place that would be optimized for future land uses for the district. And so that's something we still need to consider as we work forward through this process, should the board select it. As part of the long-term O&M, there'd be annual inspections, and there also would be required some monitoring wells, as would be the same if it was at Pigeon Hill. Next slide. And so we've seen this slide already once before, but I want to show in this one how this alleviates some of our key challenges. Next. And so by removing the use of Army Corps of Engineers property and removing the river crossings, it alleviates a lot of these agency dependencies and approval processes. We no longer need to obtain exclusivity agreements from the Corps and their leasees because it no longer involves a federal partner. We no longer need to go through the NEPA process, only CEPA. A DTSC would still be involved, obviously, because they're required to oversee our remedial action plan, and they have their own participation process that they would be involved in. but the river crossing permits would also be removed. So those are some key constraints. Next slide, please. I want to dive in a little bit further into the actual construction of this project and how this, if selected, this alternative would alleviate some of our challenges. So starting here in July, this is anticipated to be in 2025. We have to get the site inspected by our biologist to make sure there's no nesting birds. Under the current CAMO approach, this would, the two sites and the 8 mile haul route would need to be cleared by the biologist to make sure there's no impacts on nesting birds. Once that's completed, we'd have to prep the sites, prepare the roads, do tree trimming, and build the crossings. Then we can commence site excavation. As you see here, from September 1st to the 14th, there is a dove hunting season that we'd have to be avoiding, hauling, so mitigate impacts on the leases, which leaves us with a fairly narrow 5-week window for the actual hauling before we are into duck hunting season. You'll notice at the bottom, we also show here this flood season. Obviously, we can't predict the future of weather, but that is something that is in the back of our minds as we're looking at this, is that risk of floods occurring. By floods, I mean high flows in the rivers that could damage our river crossings and make this a challenge. And then soil processing would occur subsequent to the hauling being completed. Next. So by going with, if the board were to select the in-place remediation alternative, it alleviates a handful of these key constraints. River crossings are no longer required. Hauling is no longer required. Because of these being handled in place, dove hunting and duck hunting are no longer a factor. And they are high enough in the basin where, barring any sort of mega event, a high-level flows are out of concern. So this is being treated more as a general construction project. Next slide. Additionally, it also has benefits. We're not having our biologist or the biologist go out and assess the entire haul route, which would speed that process along. And the site prep would be much more rapid because we're not looking at the entire almost 6-mile haul route. Next slide. And this also allows us to expand our soil processing window to get this done earlier in the season before we get into that flood season. Next slide, please. Looking at this from a financial comparison, and the center here, we see our CAMU consolidation approach, which is our current approach, and the in-place remediation alternative. We've identified the three kind of major differences between the projects. River crossings are almost $250,000. I have a little asterisk here indicating that this does not include the permitting or the consultant support to get the permits completed. This is just the actual physical construction. And then the hauling component of that would no longer be occurring with in-place remediation alternative. We would need to source clean sediment and haul that across normal roads, and there's no restrictions on that. We estimate that to be about a $10,000 effort. So total remediation costs for the CAMU consolidation approach is roughly $2.6 million, and for the in-place alternative, $1.78. Long-term O&M is slightly higher in the in-place remediation alternative because we are looking at annual inspections and maintenance that would be occurring now at two locations, Pigeon Hill and Foreman Clay Target Range, versus if they were consolidated, it'd be at a single location in a Pigeon Hill. So slightly higher here, but as you see, the difference is not significant. And so kind of in summary, we're looking at if selected, an in-place remediation alternative would provide a savings of almost $800,000 to the district. Next slide, please. And so in summary, some clear benefits that we've already identified and talked through quite a bit. No exclusivity agreements are required. No river crossings and associated permits. It provides us a significant increase in flexibility. There is no impact on wetlands operation and maintenance for our VCs that perform duck hunting. It reduces the downtime for the active shooting range because we can remediate Pigeon Hill much quicker. Before I talk about this one, the $800,000 in savings. Some new changes that we need to evaluate if the board were to select this alternative. that we can optimize these, be future work if selected. We need to better understand the land use control so that 1 acre containment area at Pomroken target range. Is our understanding that down the road, if the district were to elect to construct anything in that area, there would be limitations on what could be placed on top of that.
Sure.
Whereas the remaining portion of the acreage would have no land use restrictions. So there'd be some additional work to figure out where that would be best to locate that, and additional efforts put forward to figure out if we could reduce that area smaller, lessen that impact. We would also need to locate the soil processing area, optimize that so that it's going to have minimal impact on the nearby residents. And then, as I mentioned before, there would be a slight increase in O&M costs. So figuring out ways to optimize those things, there's things that we could look to evaluate and optimize moving forward if selected. Next slide. So we're looking for a direction from the board and how to proceed. And that concludes my presentation. I have to answer any questions.
Fabulous. Fabulous presentation. I loved your slides. That was
very descriptive. It was the red lines. No, we don't have to do that. Any questions or
question? Okay. Can you tell us the difference between transporting and in place remediation? What's the process? Or the transportation would take the soil out of sight? Or
are you referring to removing it offsite to an external facility, or you were talking about the CAMU approach?
The CAMU approach. You gave us two options here.
Correct.
So can you tell us what these? How the process works?
Sure. Show the map of both the sites. Yeah. Here. Okay. Yeah, maybe even this one here might be better, I think. So the site here shown in blue is the former Big Target Range.
That's
very good. Here we go. Material from this location would be, I believe it's 14 acres, just a little over 10,000 cubic yards would be scraped off the site. It's pretty steep topography, so it would be stockpiled at the bottom, loaded into off-road dump trucks.
So usually it's half an inch.
It'd be 6 inches in this case is what we're targeting. That's our expectation.
Okay.
We would haul that material along this route here, cross the Santa Ana River. This portion here is designed to be kind of a passing lane in concept, so we could kind of semi in the middle, so we could have one flow of traffic coming this direction, flow of traffic coming the other. From across here, there's a Mill Creek crossing here. It would be dumped here, and because of that limited window, we would be prioritizing kind of an all-hands-on-deck effort to get material from this location to Pigeon Hill as rapidly possible and dropped here during that five-week window, and then subsequent to that, we would do processing and ultimate disposal on a camp.
Okay, when you treat it, once you treat it, are you taking the soil back, or you're...
No soil would stay there. So it would be processed and similar to what I described for the target range in standalone. It'd be processed and any of the lead that could be extracted out would be recycled, and the remainder of that would be placed into that long term. So it would be referred to as a CAMU or disposal. So it would not come back to form a target control.
And the in place would basically on site. You don't have to transport anything, just treating it with it.
We would be handling all of that processing on site within Formula Clear Tiger Range and then ultimately putting it in a very similar type facility on the property. So it would not be leaving the site.
Thank you.
Just to comment, the in place certainly seems to be superior in almost every way, except you're still operating in the hottest period of the year. But you're doing it for a shorter duration. So.
I see there's some long-term O&M that's contemplated at 23,000 a year. What is that?
The long-term O&M primarily includes the major inspections of fault types. It includes the groundwater wells that would need to be installed and the annual monitoring that goes along with that. And there's an annual reporting requirement that would be need to be submitted to DTSC. Providing those results.
It goes on forever.
We've modeled 30 years for our financial purposes. Not my favorite either, but
you're gonna have to make sure the lead doesn't seep into the water.
It's not going anywhere.
Well, out of all the costs, that's pretty small.
With the edification of the newer members, we have a sinking fund in place where we're collecting funds from the Orvagi operation on a monthly basis that we came up with our help from AECOM coming up with a number, and we're going to collect seven figures over a long period of time to help us offset.
So that's for post-closure cleanup.
Yeah, to help us offset some of those costs.
Interim and post-collect. This is interim, Kevin's talking about, and then post-closure cleanup.
So they are helping us pay for this, so it's not a free ride.
Any more questions on this? Anybody? All right. Do we have
Madam Chair, I had a question.
Okay.
I think I don't know. My perception was shaky. Did you bring up that the future potential users could somehow assume some of the O&M? I thought I heard you say that, but I wasn't sure because I agree with the comment of you. I thought you made the comment. I did want to repeat it.
What is that? The future?
Future users, we could potentially pass on.
Can you turn
down
your microphone? Wow, it's loud. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's all. Thank you.
All right, we're good there?
A future owner could assume somebody owned them.
Oh, but so yeah.
That's the issue, right?
If we
negotiated.
Yeah, if we sold the land and they assumed it because they were going to build some.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do something over the top of this eventually. Just a utility or something like that. Water pump or, you know, well system. Something that
you could put
development would need.
You couldn't put a house over it.
Right.
But you could put pickleball courts, tennis courts,
right.
Park.
Yeah.
You could even be grass even. So,
you could assign 300 homes to pay part of it too. But you can't build a house on it. There you go. That's all I meant.
Okay. All right.
One more question about the cost comparison. By eliminating a lot of the approval process and the time and trouble of getting that, you haven't really affected any cost reduction between those comparisons, have you?
You say that
as far as staff time.
So, no, we haven't incorporated
staff time.
It didn't include the permitting.
Okay. So there are actually greater cost savings than what we're seeing.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Just as a government person, it's kind of sad that we have to make our decisions based on how expensive permits are and how complicated they are. But, but it's reality.
Okay. Excellent.
All right, do we have a motion? Do you have another comment, Director Sheldon?
No, I'm sorry. Okay. No, I do not. Thank you. I apologize.
That's right. Do we have a motion on this? Move it forward to the board.
I'll move the item.
Thank you.
I'll second.
All right, we got a motion and a second.
To be clear, what the item is. That's for the in-place remediation.
In-place
right?
Remediation
as
presented.
Okay, we got it.
Okay. Roll call, Director Sheldon. Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes, from the real director. Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Yao.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Director Sheldon, your hand is up. Did you mean it to be up?
All right. We're going to move on to item number 7, which is a status update on the City of Anaheim's proposed OC Riverwalk project.
Yes, thank you. And we do have an update from the city. JJ from the City Department of Parks is here, and he's going to give a presentation and has some slides here that I will share on Zoom, and we will just a moment.
Is there a particular place where you want me to
speak? I think that's fine.
Okay.
Microphone's up there, so if you just forget.
Sure.
Or actually, they're in the ceiling, too, so
that'll
come up. Yeah. So thank you, Bruce. Thank you, staff, and good afternoon, Chair and Directors. My name is JJ Menes. As Bruce mentioned, I am the Parks Manager from the City of Anaheim, and it is my pleasure to provide an update on the City of Anaheim Polesky River Walk project today. And with me is Mark Krebs from Pace Engineering, in case there are questions too difficult for me to answer. And so if we can go to the next slide, Chris. And so here is how we're going to spend the next few minutes, or how we're going to provide an update on the project. I'm going to start by giving you a quick summary of items that I shared with this body before, including those that are related to the goals of the project, those elements that we're moving forward with. And then we will also share a little bit or provide a recap of the multiple partners that are involved with this project. I will then move into the update section, and then we'll be spending quite a bit of more time on the partnership opportunity between the City of Anaheim and Orange County Water District. And so then, and then I'll end with how the project will move forward and questions and answers. But before you shift to the next slide, Bruce, I just want to draw your attention to that circle on the right for the board and those on Zoom as well. This is nothing short of a transformative project, and we are very glad to report there are many partners that have joined us in December to make it happen. Next. Okay, so just quickly, here are the project goals I've shared with this body before, in no particular order or priority, but we want to share, obviously, there are many, many other ambitions that are not specifically stated. These goals are meant to be more understood by the general public. Of course, of interest to the water district is water capture and retention, which are very clear for us as we move forward. Just quick summary. We did start this process by analyzing what can be improved between in this 2-mile corridor, roughly to the south border by Orangewood and to the north at Anaheim Coast. Again, the 2-mile corridor, both sides of the river and in the river. We identified through an engineering feasibility study completed in fall of 2021, a minimum of 17 ways that we can deliver and implement a river walk in the City of Anaheim, Orange County. And we received funding to move forward with five of those elements that are depicted here in this image. Of the most important to this body would be the impoundment of the impoundment in the river, as well as the extension of the trail north of Catella to the existing Anaheim folks. Thanks. Just quickly, I want to share with you, and as I referenced in the back or alluded to, there are many, many partners that will be required and are willing to come together to make this project happen. You know, from the private sector and the adjacent landowners to the regulatory agencies to lots of funding partners, of course, it's quite the undertaking. And this body and this agency, we are looking to partner with you to own and operate and also to secure GWS water for the incumbents. Into the update area. So we last time we were here, we shared with you that we had a $5 million grant from the Coastal Conservancy to develop construction documents for the project, or the five funded elements from 0 to 65. Today, we are very eager and happy to share with you that we have secured additional funding from the U.S. Department of Transportation. We received a $2 million grant to close the design gap. The Office of Representative Lou Correa has just assigned $1.6 million through the federal allocation process to move forward with the bridge component. Our assembly member, Belino Valencia, has co-authored a bill that brings lots of funding to the City of Orange, to the City of Anaheim, and to the City of Santa Ana to develop projects with regional impact. This is what the bill states, which would greatly benefit this project.
We are currently working on a Caltrans Active Transportation Program grant and seeking for some implementation funding. We're also, related to the water infiltration and capturing, and we're looking at water resiliency grants, and there are many, many more funding sources out there, including land and water conservation, rivers and mountains, urban conservancy, and I can go on and on, but there is lots of funding and lots of positive movement in this update. Next. There you go.
Yep.
Of course, we just want to do a quick recap and reminder that the majority of the land that this project would be implemented on, it's owned by Orange County and managed by flood control. So that's the area in yellow. And then the water district does have ownership, the area in light blue to the north of the railroad. And that would be where the trail extension is proposed. Happy to report that just like we're having conversations here and updates, we are also working with those bodies and the staff to continue to move forward and determine the most appropriate vehicles to secure it and put in place to implement the project. Next. Maybe zoom out a little bit.
Yep,
so
yep.
This is it's a 2-mile stretch, so I apologize that it's not as easy to zoom into, but we want to just share with you that we have developed and Mark and his team have really been doing a great job in understanding the corridor. And we now have a draft master plan vision that will guide us towards implementation. We understand every single layer behind this image, which include all the critical infrastructure, all the utilities that are on the west side of the river, all the access requirements by the multiple agencies that are, again, existing and need to remain in place. But we also have clear understanding of the infrastructure that will be required to move this project forward. For instance, the gating and putting GWS water into the impoundment areas. Next. We have developed some imagery to go with a master plan that will allow us to communicate with our general public and with a variety of agencies. So here on the very top left, it's a look, it's a view, a rendering looking north, just south of the 57 freeway. On the top right, or my top right, is a view of on the east side of the river, looking south. This is just north of Catella. The bottom right is a view from the just north of Catella, looking north towards the mountains, and you can see the bridge component there in the back. A fun one on the very bottom left corner. We have really been talking about how we continue to communicate with our public and how can we add some art and some educational components at the same time. So is what we are looking at. How do we further your own mission and educate the public about this process of water infiltration, capture, and retention? And so we're very much paying attention and want to collaborate with your staff to develop some sort of art component, interpretive panel, and or art that could go on the pavement that really shows where water comes from in Orange County, how it's captured, how it's retained. And so very similar to what we've done in other projects like Anaheim Coves, looking forward to have that component in our project as well. Next. Not super legible schedule, but just want to share with you that through the master plan process, in addition to just putting pretty renderings and imagery on the map, we've also made a lot of progress in all other areas of the project, including critical components like environmental and also permitting. So lots of different regulatory agencies, from Caltrans for Army Corps of Engineers, and many, many others. We're having conversations, and we understand now that we have a draft master plan process and are moving towards 30%, how we can proceed with making those applications. We have developed contacts, and we have a great path of moving forward there as well. Next. And so of particular interest, and the reason why we're here today is that through the direction of this body, the city and your staff have been working together on a cooperative agreement to formalize the agency's responsibilities as it relates to both the impoundment areas and then the trail extension north of Coachella. The city, with direction from your staff and collaboration, went ahead and drafted an agreement and shared it with your staff. We have subsequently received comments from your staff. And today we're here to let you know that we have had subsequent discussions with your staff and agreed at the staff level that given the fact that this project is only a master plan, and even with some elements moving to 30%, we do not have the necessary details to enter into such a specific agreement. We are still lacking some of the information, some of the specificity needed to develop a comprehensive co-op agreement. And for your consideration, and as an alternative, we have located and want to put forth this idea of a more simplified memorandum of understanding, similar to one that we have entered to, our agencies have entered to for Five Codes, which is our last partner project. And essentially, the memorandum of understanding, it sort of charts the path of how each of our agencies would move forward with this project. It is non-binding, but it does allow staff to continue to collaborate. We will continue, as we already been doing, it allows staff to work with your staff and then potentially receive additional direction on your critical infrastructure, some of your specific and preferred standard materials. And it's something that could that we could enter to until such time that the project documents and details are further developed, so that we then come back and enter into a co-op agreement to be approved by the board. I can pause here, Chair, if you'd like for a minute, or I can move to next steps.
No, go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead. Next. Your presentation and discussion.
And so in terms of next steps, as indicated here, we want to release the draft master plan agreement to our community. We want to share some of the imagery. It's basically continue the conversation, show them what we come up with based on their prior input. We also want to work with all of our engaged partners, as we have been doing, to further explain some of the details that are more intricate and related to their operations, and then move forward with MOUs with this agency, as well as Orange County Flood Control. We, of course, already have one in place with the City of Orange. And then, as shown there in the middle, though there are multiple partner agencies that I showed you on prior slides, these are the key four entities that would need to come together to make this project happen. Next.
Public Works, Orange County.
Orange County, correct. Yeah.
And that's because of flood control?
Yeah.
Correct. And that is the image on the top is what looking south, Santa Ana River, adjacent to the Arctic. Image on the bottom is same location, more or less, something that could be transformed into. Of course, very inspirational, just meant to be part of the master plan. Additional details need to be worked out and related to permitting, water levels and many other things. But this is potentially where we could head towards. That completes our presentation, and Mark and I are happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Questions, comments at this point?
Just a clarification. OC Public Works involved in large part with the flood control, but would also they be involved with portions of the trails?
Correct. OC County Parks is in charge of maintaining and operating the Santa Ana Regional Bike Trail, and we are in conversations with that staff as well as those elected officials.
Thank you. I got a question.
Okay.
Sure. A couple of questions, actually. On the graph, construction will begin, hopefully, in 2026, correct? So.
That is what we're shooting for, as depicted here, Director, and thank you for the question. We do, with the additional funding that we're seeking for implementation, so I want to just share that we only have implementation funding for a portion of the bridge component. We are seeking for implementation funding, so subject to funding.
the total cost of the project?
North of $100 million.
Yeah. So, and we, yeah, we don't have that kind of money yet.
Oh, yeah. which tags on the last time we talked about this internally within OCWD, the board, we had a draft cooperative agreement. Mm-hmm. I believe we gave the board members gave some input into that. So you're coming back with an MOU, proposed MOU, or who's drafting it?
I should look back too. The agreement that OCWD sent back to Anaheim had more detail than Anaheim was ready to agree to, or you know, I mean, this project is still in design phase. It's got a lot of partners. What we want to do right now is work with OCWD and OC Flood and OC Public Works and move the design forward with everybody's input so that, you know, however long from now, 6 months from now, whatever, a year from now, we have a design that works for everybody before we start getting into the detail of who's going to fund what, who's going to maintain what, who's going to do this. And so having that partnership to move forward and create the design that works for everybody is what we need to do now so that we can move it forward and then figure out where the money comes from, how much it's really going to cost, you know, what components need to be maintained over time, those types of things. So it was just too much. It was more detail than we were ready to commit to.
But ultimately, there will be a contract.
Ultimately, there will be an agreement. Yeah, this is just an MOU at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, madam. I'm sorry, Van, if you weren't done, I apologize.
I'm done.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a process that I'm somewhat unaccustomed to.
Steve, can you please turn down your microphone?
All right. Is that better?
It is. I'll turn the speaker down.
I'm sorry. I do apologize.
That's okay. No, go ahead.
I was saying that's a process that I'm somewhat unaccustomed to, and I think we sent the city some key terms, and I'd like to have a discussion of those before we commit a lot more staff time and a lot more work to this.
Well, and I think there's a piece of me, and that's Anaheim, obviously, that wants to move this project forward, and that I think it's amazing for Anaheim. But I think that this is a model that other cities along the river are going to want to maybe emulate or have some their version of it, because we need to tie people better to the river. We need to do a better job as a community, as a county or whatever, to make the river, it's a great amenity. I mean, the trail along there is amazing, you know? And so I think we need to participate as an OCWD board member. I think we need to participate in how that happens and how we design that. And that's this process.
But we're not talking about other agencies. We're talking about Anaheim. We're talking about other ones of the future. And like in the future, I appreciate what you said. That's nice, but that's in the future distance. And the here and now is that we need to get these issues addressed. And I guess for me in business, the more I feel Anaheim not wanting to do that, it makes me apprehensive. So I don't, because I haven't heard a good reason why not to do it, except for they don't want to do it, which again makes me more apprehensive. So I just want to say, I think, you know, I like the fact, I love the project, and I'm all for the project, but I think it's important we have a conversation and to deflect that. Anaheim is deflecting, not you, Natalie, but the city's deflecting. And that's all I have to say. I'd like to have some more specificity on that. And we could do that if we had a good faith agreement from Anaheim that we could do that concurrently. I would accept that good faith from them. But I think it should be done at least concurrently.
I think that there's a design phase that we need to work through over the next several months before we have enough information, detail on the design to discuss those components that you want to nail down.
Well, I guess we agree to disagree. Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions? Jeremy has his hand raised. Jeremy?
Yeah, just to kind of piggyback on what Director Meeks just stated, one of the concerns I had before about the prior version of the agreement is it tried to do an awful lot. And I'm not faulting that, just trying to, I guess, move things forward. But one of the things you have to do before you approve a project is you have to CEQA. And so it was really unclear to me which aspects of the project were going to be covered by CEQA done now versus done later. It wasn't clear that the scope of the overall project really wasn't definite yet. It was still kind of a work in progress, which is fine. So I think it's better the approach here where we're going to step back a little bit, better define what the elements of the project are going to be, because that'll make CEQA a whole lot easier when there's a better determination of who the lead agency is going to be for specific aspects, who the responsible agencies are going to be for particular components. And obviously, OCWD is going to be one of those for certain aspects. But I think it is probably a better approach to step back a little bit, as it looks like it's being suggested here, because the prior version just had it had some real issues with what were the actual components of the project and which ones were not. So anyway, that's just my thought. It seems like the path here is probably less likely to lead to challenge.
Director Bilodeau?
I just want to say I appreciate the update. This is really a visionary project, and I hope it comes to fruition. I think it'll be great for Anaheim and Orange, where the river's actually located.
Welcome to step up to the plate.
If I could find some money, maybe we can do some more programming on the east side of the river. And but we're broke, and like everybody else, and the city of Orange is. And I appreciate the update. And I think we do have some issues to work through, just in terms of what the obligations would be of OCWD providing water, the term and the length. And because this plant will eventually wear out or have to be replaced. And then what happens? And I think we have to think through some of those long-term issues. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Whitaker?
What do you talk about this being a work in progress and some of the features or the elements of the plan? Is it, at this stage, would you say it's accurate to say that any of those features or elements are dependent on external financing from areas other than the participants here who are involved?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So it really is that fuzzy right now, or that blurry, and it's dependent upon potential of some of that external financing.
Yes.
So we can't really get the plan ahead of what's going to be necessary to pay for those elements, right?
Yeah. And it you know, in the long run, it may end up phasing some of these elements if you can't fund all of them at once, and then that's a whole nother discussion of what that phasing looks like and what can be implemented early and what we have money for. So it is fuzzy.
knowing about the grant process and other, you know, elected officials' ability to garner some of that, it could stretch the timeline a fair amount, I think, at this point.
Yes, this is a very aggressive timeline. I mean, if everything fell into place, you know, I know that OC Vibe wants a lot of their development done in time for the Olympics, and it'd be great to have this, and which is what that date kind of represents, is having, you know, something out done before the Olympics. But without the money, it's not going to happen. And without moving this project and this design forward, it's not going to happen. So we're trying to find ways to move it forward with the funding that we do have at this time.
So it seems like we're stuck trying to get something really in focus, and it's not going to be possible for a while yet.
Right. Yeah, not until we can move forward in design.
All right, thanks.
And we want OCWD to be a big, have plenty of input to that.
I know so there's concern about who was going to operate certain aspects of it.
Right. But yeah. As we go through the design, we'll determine what those aspects are in more detail and what that takes. And Director Sheldon, from what I understand, and I was not on this board when they did it, but the Anaheim Coves project was developed in a similar way with an initial MOU first to get through kind of the design and then development of a cooperative agreement. So this isn't...
That's not correct.
Oh, I got heads shaking over here.
Ask Director Bilodeau, because he and I sat in the office with Mayor Kurt Pringle, and after Mayor Pringle scolded us, it was a done deal. So that's all I recall. Dennis?
There's some very unique psychology going on, as I recall.
So it's a very unique process.
Not in our favor.
You care to elaborate?
Lesson learned.
Thank you.
All right. So do we have what does the staff need to move an MOU forward to the board?
Well, one site will have to draft it.
Step one.
I'm assuming you want to use something similar to what you had with the City of Orange.
John, what we actually want to use is something similar, as I've noted, that we had between our agencies, which is five codes. Okay. And essentially, the template is there. Bruce and I have had discussions about to the merits of utilizing that template. And then as a starting point, both our legal counsels agreed to it. And so it would be essentially updating the project specifics. And I'm moving forward with that, bringing that back for staff considerations, or develop that with staff. With staff's input, and then bringing that back for board consideration.
Yeah, and I think we can address the same issues we've talked with the committee and with the board, and Director Sheldon is concerned about. I think we can try to at least address those in that MOU, but it would be fairly simple, non-binding MOU.
Right.
So, and I think at this point, then it would just take direction from the committee to staff. Is that right, legal counsel?
Yeah, I think so. And this item is listed as informational, so no action is required here. But direction given to staff, I think will be helpful in crafting the MOU and making sure that whatever's developed is something that allows both sides to move forward.
I would like to give the staff that direction, similar to the agreement, the MOU they initially had in the Combs project, and able to work through the details.
What's the difference between the Combs agreement and the City of Orange agreement?
The five codes agreement, again, is specific between both of our agencies. With the City of Orange, it's actually entitled the co-op agreement, and their participation is much different. The one with the City of Orange really just, as noted by one of the directors, relates back to the fact that the river is in Orange, and we will be going through their permitting and regulatory process related to Five Coasts. It acknowledges that many of the project components are in the land that is owned and managed by Orange County Water District. So it's quite a bit different responsibilities between the two agencies.
And Five Coasts, the Five Coasts MOU had things like the city and the district will work cooperatively to draft an agreement. You know, it was that kind of language. So it keeps everything moving forward, keeps staff as direction to work on this. And it spells out things like, you know, who's responsible for the environmental studies, CEQA, those kind of things. Yeah.
It's more of an organizational agreement rather than a final agreement of a project. And it creates the framework that allows the parties to negotiate what the ultimate project looks like.
Direction, then.
Does anybody object to that direction? Have them develop the MOU? All right, great. We'll move on to item number 8, status update on the Imperial Highway project.
Yes, thank you. This is my monthly update on Imperial Highway property. The committee will recall we have an agreement with Adam Streeter to do a site development analysis on the property. As part of that, we've been trying to meet with Caltrans to look at some different access options. I reported to the committee last month that we got a letter from Caltrans and basically nixing any option. But they did actually meet with us on April 3rd. We met with online teams, I think, but a number of Caltrans staff. We focused primarily on the letter I had sent to the acting director back in January and talked mainly about the intersection approach, which would which would realign the off-ramp onto Imperial Highway, the westbound off-ramp of the 91 on Imperial Highway, and align it with the property. We also talked about the roundabout approach. Caltrans staff, and they did advise us that the intersection approach directly an off-ramp that would lead the intersection into district property would likely degrade traffic circulation, cause delays in traffic on Imperial Highway, and would need a specific, require a specific justification because that would be an alteration to highway standards. I'm not well versed in at all, but highway standards. Regarding the roundabout, in order to accommodate a roundabout on eight lanes of highway, it would require a very, very large roundabout that would extend back to the bridge. And this is all Caltrans staff. Would be extremely wide. It would to accommodate four lanes in each direction. Again, this would likely disrupt the traffic flow and cause delays. And ultimately, Caltrans, to give any kind of heads up, any head nod, would require performing a performance measurement analysis to determine feasibility and ultimately have to go to the California Transportation Commission. So a long road ahead there. And they redirected staff to They recommended to staff, look at the bridge approach. That would be the only one they'd really be in favor of. Of course, it doesn't involve Caltrans. We then, with Adam Streeter's facilitating, we did meet with the traffic engineer. We had a meeting with Pete Herzad. Who is the traffic engineer and owner of Perzade and Associates. He actually is doing quite a bit of the traffic studies and work in City of Anaheim and for the City of Anaheim. In fact, what came out of that discussion, he did the traffic study for OC Vive, including Ball Road, where we're working with Caltrans on the decertification. So very interesting to talk about. He suggested at this time, this isn't even a traffic engineering issue. He said it's a land use issue. Land use, because if the district were to take an approach or look for developers, for example, for a housing development that included low-cost housing element or even shipping container storage, something that addresses two of the governor's executive orders, that would then force Caltrans to really take another look at this. So, yeah. But at this point, without a land use, without a direction, without a firm direction with it, then Caltrans at this point is washing their hands of it, saying we're not willing to do anything. So I think at this point, what I think we would do is just have Adam Streeter finish the site development analysis, finalize it, bring it back to the committee as an item, and then get direction from the committee on how to go forward with it. RFP, talk to developers, find another use for it. That concludes my report.
I don't know about the shipping container issue, but even with the affordable housing element and the builder's remedy, you still have to complete CEQA, which would do the traffic analysis and bridge impacts.
Right.
All that. So.
And Anaheim has not, their housing plan has not been adopted, right?
Right.
So it builder's remedy applies.
And that's really
okay.
What they're talking about.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So you're saying a large low-income housing project?
Or a housing project that has a low-cost component to it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And widening a bridge on the Imperial probably doesn't make those units affordable. Director Yell, I see you. Do you have your hand up?
Thank you, Chair Meeks. Bruce, I heard you talk about modifying Imperial, into a roundabout. I was thinking about modifying the on-ramp. Obviously, it's going to take some dedication of our property to do that, but that actually might be a more cost-effective, potentially a more cost-effective solution than to modify Imperial. I was thinking about the on-ramp. And so that gives cars a way to go in and out of the property, and then also facilitating the traffic getting on the freeway. So I didn't hear you talk about that. Did our consultant look into that?
No, not the on-ramp. We just talked. We went back to looking at what I had discussed with the committee about a year ago, and that was modifications to Imperial. Well, it's Imperial Highway and the on-ramps, off-ramps.
Okay, yeah, the turning Imperial Highway into a roundabout is probably not going to work, but the on-ramp, we could potentially look into that, and obviously it's going to take a larger footprint, and so some of the property, our property will probably have to go towards that. Okay, thank you.
I got a question. Yeah, for this property, the history of it, was it a nursery?
It was leased. The district leased it as a wholesale nursery for about 30 years. The lease, the wholesale nursery terminated, it was month to month for the last 10, 15 years. They terminated the lease a year and a half ago. Because it was wholesale, there was never an issue with a few trucks going in and out. Most likely because the district has access rights for maintenance vehicles, although those aren't maintenance vehicles, but so it was never quite an issue. Looking back on handwritten notes and other things, minutes from prior meetings 20 years ago, 30 years, a while ago, the access has always been an issue, and there's always been conversations with Caltrans and rejections by Caltrans, not formal, but just conversations. So, but yes, to answer your question, it was a wholesale nursery.
Okay, so have we turned it into a retail?
No.
Is that your retail?
No. Because of the access issue. The access, the driveway, is a driveway right onto the starting point of an on-ramp freeway.
Okay.
So vehicular in and out is just, where you had maybe three or four trucks a day during the whole day, maybe it wasn't an issue, but to have retail going in and out. And that's the biggest problem we have with that property right now. And while the real estate agents weren't able to do anything with it until that gets resolved.
So if the real estate agent looked at another wholesale nursery or some low traffic use like that, and what kind of revenue that would be?
I don't recall. I need to go back and talk to Mike.
He did pursue some specific people that the former tenant
like
recommended.
And they just
weren't interested. It's so big, they just didn't want to do it. Initially,
Harvest
Nursery,
which is one of our current tenants.
They were invited over to look because all the irrigation lines were in place and everything. It was kind of a turnkey, but they weren't interested. It's huge. It was 19 acres. They weren't interested in taking it over.
And that wholesale nursery was a tree nursery, so it was all big. I'm sorry, can we
subdivide it?
There's still a very small amount of traffic.
Yeah,
there's a sign on
trucks
that.
A day that can go in there. So
yeah, there's a sign on the property that says you can subdivide it. Okay. But he has gotten interest from like people that want to develop like a soccer field, recreational soccer field, but you get so much traffic. Well, yeah, it wouldn't work. It'd be really
dangerous.
Was
there a training? The Anaheim Police Department wanted to lease it potentially for some of their driving training.
Regional police training.
Yeah, regional police training thing, pavement, and just do fast maneuvers in our new Teslas.
We have Teslas?
We have Tesla police cars now.
And I think it was in a discussion with Rudy Amami, and he had suggested, besides the police training, that we should maybe pursue a billboard.
Oh, yeah. Yes. The corridor?
Yes. Very good. A billboard. It might be an interesting spot for solar, maybe.
That would be good. Yeah. See, that's very low traffic use.
Yeah. It's right. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Wind farm. It's always breezy along the river there.
But at this point, I think
awfully noisy.
We'll bring the report back. We'll bring the report back to the committee and look for direction.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. And item number 9, quarterly report on leases and permits and licenses.
And we'll have Daniel Park, our property manager, report on the leases and licenses and rent.
This report is on leases from January 1st, 2024 to March 31st of 2024. In the first quarter, we had an increase of $36,567. This is a relatively normal increase, but this increase of 9% mainly came from the Micro Hockey Shooting Enterprises paying early rent, and Sandwood Enterprises paying their December 2023 rent a little late. So
last year,
yeah. So that's the main reason for that 9% increase. Other than that, the annual increase was relatively similar to last quarter's. In the second quarter coming up, we have the Duck Prado Basin Duck Club lease, as well as the Rada Shooting Enterprises lease, both expiring on June 30th. In the third quarter, we have the Pheasant lease for the Microhaga expiring on September 30th. So those would be the renewals coming up. As far as all
those
of our
agreements have automated renewals?
They do not. So we'll be coming back to the actually the duck hunting.
They were on consent.
On consent today.
Yeah, they're on consent today.
The Pheasant lease will be coming in the third quarter. As far as all the lessees and permittees and licensees, all of them are in full compliance with the terms of their lease and are current with their rents. So we have no issue there. And in the first quarter, the general manager did not issue any property license agreements. That will also be rendered.
Thank you. And items to agendize as matters for consideration to make. Board members and
the items 2, 3, 4
that one's been approved.
Yes. Okay. And 5 and 6 is the remediation.
Yeah.
We're changing direction.
Right. Change their direction. Yes.
Okay.
Right. 2 through 6.
Okay. And any director's comments? General manager's comments?
There are none.
And we stand adjourned. Thank you.